Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Got a really cool show for you today. The Undertaker from the WWE is the guest. Survivor Series is this Sunday. He will play a big role in it as he makes his final farewell. That's how WWE is billing it. So we talk about that and go through a lot of stuff from his very illustrious career with the WWE. If you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, Jim Nance was on last week. Make sure you check that out. We've had Kirk Herbstreit on recently, Peter Schrager, Ernie Johnson. Check those all out in the archives. Subscribe, rate, and review. All right, let's not waste any more time. Let's get to The Undertaker. All right, joining me now, doesn't really need much of an introduction, one of the all-time greats, if not the all-time great in pro wrestling history, from the WWE, The Undertaker, Mark Calloway. How's it going?
It's great, man. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Been a fan for a long time, and a big week for you here. We got Survivor Series on Sunday, 7 o'clock on the WWE Network. They're billing it as the final farewell for you. But details are very, very few and far between on what's going to happen. I don't know if you can spill anything without giving us full spoilers, but what should we expect to see on Sunday at the Survivor Series?
You got about as much knowledge as I do. only thing I can safely say is at some point I will make an entrance and go to the ring and address the WWE universe, and that's about as much as I know right now, tell you the truth.
It's funny because when people come on here to promote things, there's usually like a list of things people give me to plug and to say this, and we're going to do this, and we're here. This one here, we've got no details. So
we got no details other than, yeah, it's November 22nd to the day is my 30-year anniversary. Obviously, it's been 30 days of The Undertaker. It's been quite a bit, and it's been humbling, but I honestly, you know, I'm dealing with Vince McMahon here, and there's no one that Vince McMahon loves to play a practical joke on or rib more so than The Undertaker. So I'm going in with crazy expectations of what potentially could happen to me on Sunday.
That you brought up a few things there that leads into questions I wanted to ask you. You mentioned, you know, you're going to walk to the ring and we'll see what happens. I got to ask if your entrance has become so drawn out, it seems like, as the years have gone on. I mean, there are pay-per-views sometimes recently where it feels like it takes you like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to get to that ring during the end. Is that, has that been like a purposeful thing where it's drawn out longer and longer? And do you ever joke about how long it takes you from, you know, when that first gong hits to when you finally get in the ring and start either your match or getting on the microphone? I mean, it's almost like a joke on Twitter too sometimes, like how long it takes. It's gotten pretty crazy over the last few years, it seems like.
Yeah. So obviously what's so important to what we do is not only the wrestling match part of it, but it's the story. And so I think through the last few years, because you see less and less of me, obviously those are the things more so a lot of times than even the matches are the entrances.
Yeah.
And the anticipation, you know, because you get the blackout and you get the dong and then the blackout and then you hear the thunder. So it's all a buildup to when I finally come around that curtain. And because, you know, the WWE does a lot of things with, you know, they'll pretend that somebody's coming out and it'll be somebody completely different.
Yeah.
So it's kind of everybody's on bated breath. Well, is it him? Is it not him? And then when you finally, you know, when you finally do the reveal, then it's, you know, it's just part of the buildup to, an appearance, because I just do so few now. And you know, when you add different things to the element, you know, when you add the smoke and you add the fire, and it just, it's, it's gotten longer. Of course, I mean, that character does not walk fast. It's the, you know, the whole story. The match starts as soon as the lights go out. That's when the match starts.
Yeah.
In my opinion, right? So, I mean, that's all setting the table. And then that guy standing in the ring that has to stand there and watch all this, right? I mean, you are watching your demise slowly making its way to the ring. And that's kind of the concept that we use.
Even the way you take the hat off, I mean, you don't just take it off. It's, you know, very drawn out. You know, everything is drawn out.
Yeah, everything is done meticulously and for a reason and for a purpose. Yeah.
You know, you said a couple of times here that, you know, we haven't seen a ton of you in the ring and on television over the last couple of years. But one thing we've seen, which I've been fascinated by as a WWE fan and as an Undertaker fan and as someone who covers media, is, you know, you went 30 years with barely doing any interviews. And now we've seen you do a ton of interviews over the past year with The Last Ride, which was great on WWE Network. So two questions for you. One, what question are you sick of being asked after doing a year, it seems like, of interviews? And two, how difficult has it, that transition been from always staying out of the limelight into doing all these interviews? How's that been for you?
The biggest question is, you know, everybody asks is why was I so protective of the character, you know, which
that's interesting to me. That's interesting. Cause I think that's a legit, I think that's a great question that I haven't seen. I thought you were going to say something either like, you know, there's the famous story about you waiting backstage to beat up Shawn Michaels if he didn't do the right thing at WrestleMania with Mike Tyson. I thought maybe, you know, the Montreal Screwjob. I thought you'd give me one of those. That's an interesting answer that you gave me there.
Yeah, I mean, those are actually, you know, those are really compelling questions that I have very, obviously, I have a lot of, you know, insight on. For me, like, for not doing media for all those years and now just for the last 8 months, you know, there's just been this, it's the same question. It's not whether it's a good question or a bad question. It's just that same question over and over and over and over again. And, you know, regardless of what we're doing, I'm just not one that likes to, I don't really like to talk about myself. And it goes against everything, you know, that I've done for the last 30 years. Not only have I protected it, but, you know, I hadn't had to talk about myself in such a, you know, in a way. So,
Have you enjoyed doing all of these interviews? Has it been more fun than you thought it might be?
You know, sometimes it is because, you know, sometimes I'll get caught up in a story and then I start reliving it and I enjoy it all over again. Like there, you know, so there's been some really insightful questions that catch me off guard that go, yeah, this is, you know, it's fun. It's fun to relive some of that stuff. And, you know, I've had to hold it in for all these years. Yeah. I still find myself a lot of times when I answer questions, like one, the question to my answer will go on and on and on because I'm thinking in my head, like I'm fighting that instinct. Like, should I be talking about this? There's still that part of me that's saying, shut up, quit talking, you know, kayfabe. And then there's that other part of me that's like, no, the cat's out of the bag now, brother. You got to let it go. So, you know, it kind of has that little bit of a train wreck sometimes. And my answers become longer and longer.
Given that you didn't do interviews for so long, when someone gets a chance to ask you some questions, I mean, there's so many things over your, you know, like the streak, for instance, is obviously this monumental thing. So, but there's a part of me that, you know, I'm prepping for the interview. I'm like, if I ask him about the streak, he's probably going to go, oh, God, another frigging question about the streak, you know? So I don't want to just give you the same old, but, I mentioned the streak, but looking back, do you think that was the right decision there to end it when you guys did with Brock Lesnar? Or would you, looking back, would you like to have maybe kept it going a little longer?
I think so. I've answered this a couple of times, but it's a good question because the streak's such a vital part of my legacy. I always say I don't think Brock needed that victory. Brock was huge. Brock's just coming back from, you know, I mean, he's been back from UFC now, and he is, you know, he's an attraction all to himself. And whether he loses to The Undertaker is not going to hurt his stock one bit. He's still going to be, you know, he's going to still be the beast incarnate. I thought personally that it would have done much more for Roman Reigns than it would have for Brock Lesnar. So only in that sense. I would have, you know, Roman Reigns would have made a lot more sense to me than Brock.
So you have a very special and unique relationship with Vince. If anyone out there has not watched The Last Ride on WWE Network, you need to check it out. I think the most fascinating, I mean, there's a lot of fascinating aspects of it, but watching your relationship with Vince is up there. Did you have the type of ultimately he's, you know, I've had so many people from WWE on over the years and they all say the same thing. Every decision is made by Vince when it comes down to a final decision. But because you had this unique relationship with him, could you have fought back and said, this is not the right guy to end this, or, you know, we don't need to end the streak tonight. We don't need it here with Brock, or, you know, but Vince, you're not going to be able to change his mind.
So through the course of my 30 years, I've had several conversations with Vince, and not agreeing with a direction we were moving in or a finish. And, you know, I would go into his office and we would discuss it, and, you know, we would go back and forth and back and forth. And then finally it's just like, okay, we'll do it your way. Could I have probably changed the finish? Maybe. I think probably I could, because it had gone back and forth. In those last few weeks, it had gone back and forth several times. The night of the of WrestleMania, the day of when I showed up, I was going over, mm-hmm. and the finish got changed during the day. I remember it as clear as day. I was sitting in a dressing room by myself, and Vince comes walking in. Vince doesn't ever come into the dressing rooms. You know, you usually get summoned to go to his office, right? And as soon as I seen him come in the dressing room, I knew exactly what he was coming in for. And you know, and he gave me a spiel, and I was like, you know, I said, okay, I said, you know, basically it was like, are you sure? I mean, because once we do this, we can't go back,
right?
And once the streak's broke, it's broken. And so I just had a few questions in, you know, similar to that, that just kind of made him think for a second. And he was like, yeah, I think this is what I want to do. And I said, okay, that's what we'll do then.
Over the years, what was your biggest, I'm going to use the word fight, but I don't mean disagreement, argument, battle with Vince over either a storyline or, you know, something he wanted you to do, or anything, you know, promo, lose a match, there was the thing with, you had Stephanie on a cross. I mean, was there anything where you were like, this is really not what I want to do, and it turned into a good contentious battle?
We had, and I'm sorry, I don't remember all the details to it, but it centered around the first Punjabi prison match. And, he was just steadfast in how, because Khali wasn't able to do it. So Big Show ended up being in the match, and he was just steadfast that he wanted this bump through the door. And, you know, I kept telling him, I said, this is going to look like crap. It ain't going to work the way you see it. I've been on this thing, this structure all day. It's just not going to happen that way. And he, oh, no, it'll be great. And I'm telling you, it's gonna suck. And you know, and there's a spot in that match, if you look back, where I jumped from one. So there was two perimeters, right? So I jumped from one to the outside, which would have been the perfect time for me to get out. And it would have been, the people would have lost their mind. And they did. As soon as I jumped, the people went crazy, but I had to go back around and get to the way to the finish. That, so that's one of those I gave up on, and it did. It stunk. It was so bad.
Right.
And, but to his credit, he did come to me and say, "You were right. I was wrong.
That's always good.
We should have done it your way." That was very far and few between. But you know, there were a few other things, but not, that was probably one of the more contentious ones. You know, I didn't want to throw Mick off the top of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Mick did, and I kept telling Mick no. I was like, "I'm not doing it. I won't do it." And you know, and then Mick kind of went to Vince and sold Vince on it and told him, "I can do it safe. I can be all right." You know, so they kind of double teamed me there, and obviously we know how that turned out.
And it's interesting about that, because obviously it's become just an iconic and legendary moment in WWE history. And I, you know, I don't want to kiss your ass just because you're on, but I will. You know, everyone talks about Mick obviously taking that bump. And even more, I guess, in the second most reaction to that is the call by JR, which has become legendary. People don't talk about you, your role in that. I mean, you have to throw him perfectly or he's a dead man. But, you know, I mean,
yeah.
This is going to sound stupid. You didn't practice that at all. Like, it did. So that first time you throw him off that top is that time. I mean, and you have to have that, like I said, you have to be perfect in that toss or something really horrific can happen. So does the Undertaker actually get nervous? Would Mark Calloway get nervous pulling that off in that moment when he's throwing Mick Foley off a cage, the top of the cage?
I was more concerned pre-match, you know, once, you know, we're talking what, 97, right? 97?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. In 97, I mean, once I made my entrance, I was so dialed in. You know, I mean, I was Undertaker for all practical purposes. When I go out, right, I am that. There is no Mark Calloway, really. But I do remember people kind of look at me with a, you know, lifted brow a little bit when I say this. It's the closest thing and the closest time that I can ever remember having an outer body experience. Because when I let him go, and, you know, obviously it took a second and a half tops for him to hit the table, but it seemed like an eternity. And I could see, it's so strange because I can see him flying through the air and then I can see myself standing there, like watching this thing. It was really bizarre. And it's the only time in my life I could ever say that anything like that's happened to me. You know, but it was, you know, those next few seconds after he hit the table, you know, those were probably the most nervous that I was, just waiting to see if he was going to move.
Right.
And then obviously, you know, he rolled over and his arm moved and I was like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, it's over now.
But then you got to throw him through the cage.
Well, you know, that one was far worse than the table, because the panel broke, and you know, I mean, I don't even like to say it, but I mean, that's an inch, maybe 2 inches away from being catastrophic.
Yeah.
I mean, another 2-inch rotation, Mick doesn't get up from that.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if you ever wanted one match to signify or just be an example of how tough a human being can be, that shows you everything you need to know about Mick Foley and what he was willing to put his body through, you know, for his fans.
Yeah. But do you, you know, I'm one of these guys, I guess, 'cause of my age, you know, I'm probably I'm the fan that WWE probably hates right now because I'm always hung up on the Attitude Era. I just wish we could always go back to the Attitude Era, which you just can't in this day and age. You just can't do it. My God, was that like not just the craziest and wildest time of your career?
It was absolutely the best.
It really was.
It was so good. And it was kind of liberating for me because, you know, I'd already decided that I wanted to kind of break away for a little bit. So I become, you know, the American Badass, which kind of took all the shackles off of me and the handcuffs. And,
yeah,
you know, it allowed me to cut promos that I would never, ever be able to cut. And it just gave me a whole different personality while still kind of, you know, bringing some of the Undertaker along with me. But, I've said this in interviews, like, I don't know that I survive the Attitude Era if I don't make that change. Because it's really difficult. I mean, you know, Kane was able to do it, but I don't know that I would have been able to do it and be able to work with the likes of The Rock and Stone Cold, because their promos were just off the chart. And then just the content of what we were doing, it was just so good.
This just popped into my head while you were speaking and you mentioned The Rock and the promos. You know, for us outsiders who are not, you know, you're known as like the locker room leader, the locker room policeman, and, you know, you're there to keep everyone in check. And there was a famous promo on one of the Monday Night Raws, I don't know if you remember, where The Rock starts imitating everyone and he imitates you, the dead. Do you know that's like, does he go to you beforehand and say, I'm going to do this? Or because, you know, I don't know if he has to like clear that with you and not take a chance on pissing you off with that.
I think Rock was of the mindset that I'll do the crime and then face the fines later.
That's a good mindset to have.
In our industry, it is.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard. Like when you see it and it's so entertaining, like, it's really hard for me anyway. I mean, there's some people that can just get pissed, but it's just like, for me, it's like, yeah, that was pretty good. You know, that was,
did you ever,
and then it also spurs, stuff in me to have a retort too.
Right. Do you have any stories or memories of almost breaking in the ring when someone was either cutting a promo or something funny was going on? There's a famous one with, when Mick Foley does It Doesn't Matter What You Think to The Rock, and you can see Dwayne actually fighting back, a smile there. He didn't want, you know, did that ever happen to you where you almost cracked a smile when you shouldn't have? Or,
well, it became, you know, it was like there was a contract on my head for a long time of who could try and get me to break character. You know, what we normally do at a TV taping is we have one match that's advertised, you know, sell tickets on, like, you're going to see this match. And I don't know how many years in a row it was, but I was always in the dark match. And, you know, whoever the champion was, like, and I know JBL during his title run, you know, he would come out and we'd have our dark match, and little did I know that sometimes he had a feed in his ear. So he's getting fed from, and JBL's creative enough. He didn't need anybody to feed him, but he's just got a little bit of help. Right. And he's got people feeding him stuff. And, you know, the whole setup is JBL calling, you know, he's doing this promo, and it ends up basically, you know, it's the end of the night. They've seen all the wrestling they want to see. It's going to end up with a choke slam and a tombstone. Everybody goes home happy.
Right.
But anyway, in the process, JBL cuts this 10-minute interview promo on me, right? So the one time that he almost got me, well, he came out, and I had bought this RV, this really nice, you know, 45-foot RV that I thought I wanted to travel around in. And anyway, it was a lemon, had everything that could go wrong with this thing, did. And I ended up having to, you know, sue these people. And anyway, but it was, you know, what was supposed to be a relaxing thing was just a form of stress for me. Well, JBL comes out one time and he's like, you know, obviously Undertaker, deadpan, mean face, no smile. And he goes on, he goes, are you okay? I mean, you look stressed. I mean, you look tired. You look like you need a break, you know? So this is JBL talking to the Undertaker in front of a full arena. And he goes, have you ever thought about buying an RV? He just goes on. And I damn near drew blood in my bottom lip because I'm biting my bottom lip so hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, the audience couldn't see it, but he was close enough to see my eyes to know that he was right on the cusp of having me. And it took a lot of self-inflicted pain in my bottom lip not to crack a smile on that one, because that was pretty creative.
Yeah. Speaking of those dark matches and sort of the post Monday Night Raw bits that would take place for the audience there in the crowd. I mean, you know, I don't ever like to criticize my guests who are nice enough to come on, and I certainly would not want to criticize the legendary Undertaker, but I have to say it was highly disappointing that you did not go through with the spin-a-rooney that one night. That is a clip on YouTube. If you're listening to this and you've never seen it, just go to YouTube and look up Undertaker spin-a-rooney. They have everyone from the back come out, Vince and The Rock, Stone Cold, Triple H, everyone tried, and you didn't give in.
No, I tell you what, I was so pissed at Booker because he turned on me that night. We had been doing that for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. We were tag teaming together. You know, we'd beat whoever we were working with. We'd do the setup. Obviously, finish would be Booker T doing the spin-a-rooney. And that particular night, man, it's as soon as he grabbed the mic, because I was always the one that would get the mic, he grabbed that mic and he started. And it didn't take me long to figure out where he was going with it. And I was just like, you no good dog, man. And then it just snowballed.
That's the perfect description. It snowballed. Yeah, they trotted everyone out.
And the more people they came out, the more steadfast I was. I am not doing it. I don't care. I was like, you know, there's no way I'm doing this. I am not going to kill my gimmick off for Vince McMahon's entertainment. It was all his idea anyway.
That was the one time I thought you'd buckle was when Vince came out and he did it, but you stood strong.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. And once I saw my opening, and it was funny. Once I saw my opening to get out of there, I took it. And I remember they sent Big Show after me and he caught up to me right as I got through the curtain, and I turned around. He kind of reached for my arm and I turned around and I was like, big man, I was like, I don't want to, man. I will fight you right now. He goes, I'm just doing what I was told. And I was like, well, just realize that you need to let me go and go back out there because I ain't going.
Okay, it's a great, great clip that every WWE. Oh,
that went on for probably an hour after.
Oh, really?
After the show was done. Yeah. I mean, it just kept going.
Yeah, the clip is long. Yeah. I know we got a wrap. Here with the Undertaker Survivor Series this Sunday, November 22nd on WWE Network, 7:00, the final farewell. I've always said, whenever I talk to WWE people who talk about that, there's no such thing as a farewell in WWE. You've proven that a couple of times already. Is this the farewell?
In my head, it is. You know, in Vince McMahon's head, you never say never. But I'm finally at a place in my head, in my world, that I'm okay with not getting back in the ring. I know my time has come and my time is gone, and I don't want to be out there, embarrassing myself at this point, because I don't have the physical tools that I once did. And I don't want to use the equity that I built up over the last 30 years to kind of half-ass my way through this thing. Yeah. You know, if they can't get the full Undertaker, then the full Undertaker doesn't need to be there.
Would you ever be open? I'll wrap it on this. Would you ever be, let's say, you know, you have your farewell Sunday at the Survivor Series this Sunday. Let's say you go away for a year, 2 years, we don't see you. Would you be open maybe 2, 3, 4 years, guest referee, a WrestleMania match, do commentary on a match or something like that? Or would it, you wouldn't do those things because the character of The Undertaker would never do those things?
Well, I think by the way I left in the Boneyard, because the Boneyard, that kind of character was a little bit of old school Undertaker. It was a little American Badass, and it was a little bit of Mark Calloway. It was all of them kind of put together. So that kind of opens the door for me to be able to do different things like that. And if it fit and I liked the story or whatever it was, then, you know, then yeah, I'm open to something like that. But to get in and to work a 20, 30 minute WrestleMania match, those days are long gone.
Right. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Good luck Sunday dealing with whatever surprises Vince has.
Thank you.
I hope he pushes you for a spinneroonie Sunday at the Survivor Series. Let's finally get that done.
I would not put that past him.
I'll send that into the suggestion box. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on, and congrats on the epic, epic career.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
My pleasure. Have fun Sunday. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. My thanks to Mark Calloway, the Undertaker. I have to admit, it was a pretty cool thrill speaking to him. Guy didn't do any interviews for 30 years, and now he comes on the SI Media podcast. So that's pretty cool. If you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media podcast, go into the archives and check them out. Jim Nance last week, Kirk Herbstreit was on as well, Peter Schrager in recent weeks. So subscribe, rate, review, and if you can give that subscribe button a little push, that helps tremendously. All right, again, my thanks to The Undertaker, Survivor Series this Sunday. Enjoy it if you watch it, and we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media podcast. Take care.